Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening. And don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, everyone. We have a really fascinating deep dive lined up today.
We really do. So I want you to imagine for a moment that you're a patient waiting for a life-saving liver transplant. I mean, the stakes are literally as high as they get.
Oh, absolutely. It's life or death.
Right. And you finally get the call, you undergo this incredibly arduous surgery, and you wake up, and hey, the operation is technically a success. But, and this is the crazy part, the first 30 days after that transplant are just this agonizing, terrifying waiting game.
Yeah, because you're constantly wondering, is your body actually accepting this new organ? Or is it silently rejecting it?
Exactly. And currently, to answer that question definitively, doctors often have to perform a liver biopsy, which, I mean, that means literally inserting a needle into your abdomen to physically cut a piece of tissue out of your brand new organ.
Which is just, it's incredibly invasive. And the harsh reality of that post-operative window is that our standard monitoring tools are surprisingly blunt.
Like, they just don't tell the whole story.
Right. We rely on these basic blood panels to measure liver enzymes, which, you know, they only really tell us that the organ is experiencing some generalized stress. They completely fail to pinpoint the specific cellular mechanisms of the injury.
So doctors are basically just waiting around.
Pretty much. We're essentially waiting for the damage to become severe enough to trigger these big microscopic alarms. And at that point, well, the only option left is that invasive, risky biopsy to figure out what is actually going wrong.
Man, it's wild that that's the standard. But what if we could bypass that entirely? What if a simple blood draw could act as a cellular caller ID?
A cellular caller ID? I like that.
Right, because we are talking about a technology that doesn't just tell doctors the new liver is failing, but reveals exactly which specific cells are dying, and it does this months before any standard clinical signs even appear.
It's a total paradigm shift.
It is. Think of your bloodstream as like a city's wastewater system. If you continuously sample the river downstream, the molecular debris can tell you exactly which factory upstream is dumping waste.
That's a great way to visualize it.
And so today we celebrate the work of Megan E. McNamara and the research team at Georgetown University, including the Lombardi Comprehensive Cancer Center and the MedStar Georgetown Transplant Institute, who have advanced our understanding of non-invasive monitoring after liver transplants.
Yeah, their work is just, it's phenomenal. We are doing a deep dive into their open access findings, which were published in the journal Nature Communications in 2025.
So fresh.
Very fresh. And the methodology here represents a profound shift in clinical diagnostics.
Yeah.
Moving away from generalized markers and toward microscopic precision by mapping cell-free DNA.
Okay, let's unpack this. If we're already looking for the donor's DNA in the blood, why isn't that enough? DNA is DNA, right?
Well, you'd think so, right?
Yeah.
The field has known about donor-derived cell-free DNA for a while. The traditional approach was to look for single nucleotide polymorphisms, or SNPs.
The genetic differences between people.
Exactly. The logic seems sound at first glance. Like, if I receive a donor liver, that liver obviously has a different genetic code than the rest of my body.
Right.
So if my immune system starts attacking the transplanted liver, those donor cells will rupture, and they'll spill their unique DNA into my bloodstream. By tracking the spike in donor SNPs, doctors theoretically know the organ is taking damage.
But there's a catch, I'm assuming.
A huge catch. The clinical application of that genetic tracking has a massive inherent limitation. First off, the SNP method relies entirely on the donor and recipient having distinctly different genetics.
Oh, I see. So if it's like a family member.
Exactly. If you receive a transplant from a close relative, or even if the donor's exact genotype just isn't perfectly mapped prior to the surgery, the signal totally gets lost in the noise.
Wow. So it's useless for living-related donors.
Pretty much. But the far more critical flaw is that SNPs lack cellular resolution.
What do you mean by that?
Well, every single cell in that donor liver, whether it's a hepatocyte, a bile duct cell, or a blood vessel cell, it all carries the exact same genetic sequence. So a spike in donor DNA simply screams the liver is hurt.
But it doesn't say what part of the liver.
Precisely. It is completely incapable of telling a doctor which specific tissue structure within the liver is actually failing.
Okay, so because the DNA sequence itself isn't enough, the Georgetown team shifted their focus from genetics to epigenetics.
Right, specifically DNA methylation.
And just to clarify for everyone listening, if we think of the DNA in every cell as this identical, comprehensive instruction manual for building a human body, DNA methylation provides the chemical glue that permanently seals certain pages shut.
That's spot on. What makes a liver cell different from a lung cell isn't the manual itself, but which specific chapters are actually accessible to read.
Right. And those chemical glue tags, the methyl groups, they're incredibly stable, and they dictate cell identity.
And that stability is the foundational key to this entire technology. DNA methylation is highly cell-type specific, and it is completely independent of the underlying genotype.
So it doesn't matter who the donor is?
Not at all. A biliary epithelial cell in your bile ducts has a distinct methylation fingerprint that looks practically identical to the biliary epithelial cell of a total stranger. But it looks completely different from a hepatocyte sitting just a few millimeters away in your own liver.
That is wild.
Yeah. So to leverage this, the researchers had to construct a comprehensive database of what all those different fingerprints actually look like. They built this massive reference atlas derived from 476 distinct methylomes of purified cells.
Which is, I mean, building that atlas is an immense bioinformatics challenge, especially because they didn't just map the easiest, most abundant cells.
The liver is overwhelmingly made up of hepatocytes, right?
Yeah, they account for something like 80% of the liver's mass.
So if you just grind up a bulk sample of liver tissue to map the DNA,
yeah,
the sheer volume of those hepatocyte signals will completely drown out the rarer cells. Exactly. And overcoming that bulk tissue bias was a really critical step for the Georgetown team. They systematically expanded existing atlases to isolate and sequence the rare non-parenchymal cells. They're vital to organ function, but usually just invisible in broad analyses.
So like what?
We're talking about hepatic stellate cells, which are heavily involved in liver scarring.
Okay.
There are endothelial cells that line the blood vessels and those biliary epithelial cells that form the bile ducts. By purifying these cells first, they could isolate the unique methylation blocks that define their existence.
And they even mapped the pioneer transcription factors to prove they were looking at the true foundational programming of the cells, which I thought was a really elegant touch.
Oh, it was brilliant.
Right. Because factors like FOXA1 are essentially the master regulatory proteins. They have this unique ability to bind to condensed silent chromatin and physically open the DNA, dictating the cell's ultimate fate.
Yes, and by demonstrating that the unique unmethylated regions they identified for these liver cells perfectly overlapped with the binding sites for these master pioneer factors, the team confirmed they weren't just looking at random chemical noise.
They were tracking the deep architectural blueprints of cellular identity.
Beautifully put. But having that meticulously verified atlas is really only half the battle. The next hurdle is actually finding these specific epigenetic signatures in the absolute chaos of circulating blood.
Because the blood is just a soup of everything.
A total soup. So, to test this in a real-world clinical setting, the team collected 130 serial blood samples from 44 liver transplant patients.
And they timed these blood draws perfectly around specific clinical milestones, right? Pre-transplant, post-operative, day 0 right after surgery, day 7, day 30. And vitally, they took samples at the exact moment a patient underwent a four-cause liver biopsy.
Right, so they could compare the blood data directly to the physical tissue data.
So let's break down the chemistry of how they actually read those signals, because the mechanism is just fascinating. You have this vial of blood filled with microscopic fragments of DNA from dying cells all over the body.
Right.
To reveal the methylation tags, they subject the DNA to bisulfite treatment. And this isn't just a generic wash, it's a targeted chemical conversion.
Exactly. Sodium bisulfite interacts with the DNA by converting regular unmethylated cytosines into uracil.
But if a cytosine has that chemical glue, the methyl group attached to it, it is protected from the conversion, right?
Yep. It remains a cytosine. That chemical alteration basically translates an epigenetic mark into a physical sequence difference that a standard DNA sequencer can actually read.
That's so clever.
It really is. So when the sequence is eventually amplified, those uracils are read as thymines. The bioinformaticians can then look at the final data. Anywhere they see a C that was converted to a T, they know that specific spot was unmethylated. Yeah. Anywhere the C remained a C, they know it was methylated.
But sequencing the entire human genome for every single blood draw just to look for a few specific cell markers would be financially and computationally impossible, wouldn't it?
Oh, completely. It would bankrupt the study. That is where the hybridization capture sequencing comes into play. Instead of shotgun sequencing everything, they synthesize specific molecular baits.
Like fishing lures for DNA.
Essentially, yeah. They are complementary strands of RNA or DNA designed to physically bind only to the regions of the genome that contain the key methylation blocks from their new atlas.
Got it.
They mix these baits into the fragmented DNA, the baits attached to their targets, and then they use magnetic beads to physically pull those specific bait target complexes out of the solution. It basically washes away 99% of the irrelevant background DNA.
Wow, so it concentrates the signal immensely.
Exactly. This targeted enrichment allows them to sequence those crucial regions deeply enough to detect the debris of really rare cell types without absorbing the massive cost of whole genome sequencing.
And here's where it gets really interesting. They aren't just looking at the liver. They are mapping the debris of over 40 different cell types from across the entire body. They turned the blood into an organism-wide surveillance system.
Yes, because their atlas included profiles for the heart, the lungs, the immune system, the kidneys. They are simultaneously watching everything.
And the organism-wide data is where this study really opens our eyes to the physiological reality of major surgery. Let's look at postoperative day zero. Right after reperfusion.
Which is that critical moment when the surgeon unclamps the blood vessels and oxygenated blood rushes back into the newly transplanted liver.
Right. So right after that, the team observed a massive five-fold increase in the total amount of cell-free DNA circulating in the patient's blood. Naturally, the fraction of DNA coming from liver cells spiked dramatically as the newly grafted organ took the initial stress of the restored blood flow.
Yeah, and the mechanism driving that spike is called ischemia reperfusion injury. While the donor organ is on ice during transport, it is starved of oxygen.
Makes sense.
When blood flow is suddenly restored, the sudden influx of oxygen actually reacts with metabolic byproducts to generate massive amounts of reactive oxygen species. This oxidative stress damages cell membranes, it triggers a profound inflammatory response, and it causes cells to rupture and spill their DNA.
But the data revealed that this localized event in the liver triggers a whole body shockwave. The researchers detected a staggering four-fold increase in neuron-derived cell-free DNA, alongside significant spikes in cell-free DNA originating from the heart and the stomach.
Which is just, it's unbelievable to see that quantified.
Right. Seeing neuron-derived DNA spike during an abdominal organ transplant is a stark reminder of how interconnected the body's systems are. The systemic inflammatory cascades, the cytokine storms initiated at the site of the liver, they literally cross the blood-brain barrier and cause microvascular damage in remote organs.
We have always recognized that major surgery is traumatic, but we are literally measuring brain and heart cell death from a blood draw taken immediately after a liver operation. It completely reframes our understanding of surgical trauma.
It really does. But tracking how the body recovers from that systemic trauma is where the true predictive power of the technology emerges, isn't it?
Absolutely. The researchers mapped the trajectory of recovery versus the trajectory of rejection. In patients who had a successful transplant without any subsequent allograft injury, that initial massive spike in liver epithelial DNA signals safely plummeted back down to baseline during the first postoperative week.
So the body scavengers just cleared the surgical debris, the new organ integrated, and the molecular alarms went quiet.
Precisely. But the data for the patients who eventually developed complications tells a very different story. For those who experienced allograft injury within their first year, the blood never went quiet.
Oh, wow.
There was a sustained abnormal elevation of hepatocyte and biliary epithelial cell-free DNA extending from day 7 all the way through day 30. The organ was silently bleeding cellular debris into the bloodstream, establishing a clear molecular signature of an impending crisis.
And the predictive timeline here is really the crucial metric, right? That sustained molecular warning signal, the epigenetic fingerprint of dying liver cells, was detected at a median of 63 days before a traditional tissue biopsy confirmed the diagnosis.
Yes, and in the most extreme cases, the signal was detected up to 203 days prior to clinical confirmation.
203 days, that is over 6 months.
Right, we're talking about months of advance notice where a medical team could potentially adjust immunosuppressive therapies or intervene well before the organ sustains irreversible structural damage.
That extended timeline completely changes the game. But it's the pinpoint accuracy of the diagnosis that truly sets this apart from the old SNP methods. Yeah. Because the researchers put in the grueling work to isolate and map those rare biliary epithelial cells in their atlas, the blood test can differentiate the exact anatomical source of the failure.
Yeah, when they analyzed the cell-free DNA composition at the exact time a for-cause biopsy was taken, the molecular data mirrored the physical tissue pathology perfectly.
That is just incredible.
The correlation is incredibly precise. If the physical biopsy revealed hepatocellular injury, the blood analysis showed a pure, isolated spike in hepatocyte DNA. If the biopsy indicated a biliary injury, which, by the way, is notoriously difficult to diagnose non-invasively, the blood showed a distinct spike in biliary epithelial DNA.
And what if it was both?
In cases of mixed injury, the blood accurately reflected both cellular signatures. And because they had that whole-body surveillance enabled, the test even captured extrahepatic complications that a liver biopsy would obviously completely miss.
Yeah, the incidental findings are remarkable. They tracked a patient who developed acute kidney injury following the transplant, and the data showed a clear, distinct spike in kidney epithelial cell-free DNA long before standard kidney function markers would typically alarm.
They even had a patient who contracted a COVID-19 infection during their recovery period.
Oh, wow. And it showed up.
Oh, yeah. It registered on the epigenetic panel as a massive, unmistakable spike in lymphoid cell-free DNA as the immune system went to war.
So what does this all mean for you as a patient? It means your blood is acting like a real-time, high-definition ticker tape, calling out exact organ stress months before standard biochemical markers catch up.
Exactly. And the clinical translation of this technology could eliminate some of the most burdensome diagnostic procedures currently in use. Today, if a patient presents with vague symptoms and a doctor suspects a biliary complication like a leak or a stricture, they typically have to order cross-sectional imaging like specialized MRIs or perform an ERCP.
An ERCP is not fun.
No, it's a highly invasive procedure where a physician threads an endoscope down the patient's throat, through the stomach, and physically into the bile ducts to inject contrast dye. If we can replace that entire ordeal with a simple blood draw that differentiates a mechanical biliary issue from cellular rejection, we drastically reduce patient morbidity and healthcare costs.
Yeah, that's huge.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, this allows for incredibly early, targeted medical intervention, potentially saving both the transplanted organ and the patient from severe morbidity.
This sounds revolutionary, but given the massive amount of data in this methylome atlas, how difficult is it going to be to scale this into a standard, affordable test that any hospital can run? Because running millions of fragments through a bioinformatics pipeline to check against every single cell type in the human body, that requires significant computational power and expense.
That's a really valid point.
Mm-hmm.
The transition from the bench to the bedside absolutely requires streamlining the assay. But the brilliance of building the comprehensive atlas first is that they have now identified the precise needle-in-a-haystack regions that actually matter for liver diagnostics.
Right. They know exactly where to look now.
Exactly. Clinical laboratories do not need to utilize the entire atlas for every routine post-transplant checkup. They can design highly targeted, miniaturized panels that exclusively capture the 50 or 100 specific methylation blocks that uniquely define hepatocytes, biliary cells, and perhaps kidney cells to monitor for medication toxicity.
So by shrinking the molecular target, the efficiency skyrockets, the computational load drops, and the assay becomes financially viable for everyday clinical use.
You hit the nail on the head.
They did the heavy lifting to write the entire encyclopedia so that the clinical labs only need to print a pocket guide. It is a brilliant approach.
It really is. Though it is essential to maintain scientific rigor and acknowledge the boundaries of the current study.
Always.
The Georgetown researchers explicitly note that their validation relied on a retrospective analysis. They utilized blood samples from patients who already had biopsy-proven phenotypes to confirm that their epigenetic signals accurately matched the physical reality of the tissue.
So they kind of had the answer key in hand while testing their new tool.
Precisely. To truly establish this epigenetic tracking as the new gold standard, we need large-scale prospective clinical trials. Researchers need to monitor post-transplant patients in real time, blind the clinicians to the traditional biopsy results, and prove that medical decisions made solely on the basis of this cell-free DNA methylation data result in equal or better patient outcomes across the vast spectrum of possible complications.
Yeah, that prospective validation is the mandatory next step to completely replace standard biochemical markers. But the underlying mechanics proven here that cell-free DNA methylation can non-invasively detect and pinpoint the precise cellular origins of organ injury months before traditional symptoms appear. It provides just an unprecedented window into human physiology and recovery.
It really does. It's giving us an organism-wide view of patient recovery that we just haven't had before.
Which leaves us with a truly provocative thought regarding the future of all medical diagnostics. What does this mean for the future of all medical diagnostics? And could this epigenetic surveillance one day become part of your routine annual checkup, silently monitoring every organ in your body for microscopic signs of damage? We are focusing heavily on transplant patients today because they represent the most acute need for early organ monitoring.
Right.
But as the cost of this targeted epigenetic sequencing continues to fall, imagine a near future where a standard vial of blood drawn at your yearly checkup silently monitors every single organ in your body, from the microvasculature of your brain to the epithelial cells of your lungs, detecting the microscopic cellular fingerprints of disease long before you ever feel the first symptom.
It fundamentally redefines our approach to preventative medicine, really shifting us from reacting to macroscopic symptoms to intervening at the earliest moments of cellular distress.
This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening and join us next time as we explore more science base by base.
Midnight monitors, fluorescent glow. A new liver learns a body it don't know. And in the bloodstream, tiny signals ride. Broken little letters we can't hide. We used to wait on a needle and a scar. Now the answer's humming where the heartbeats are. Reading the silence between each line. Like smoke that points to fire in time. It's written in the bloodstream, clear and strong. Methylation singing what went wrong. Hepatocytes calling by leery lights, telling us who's hurting through the night. No more guessing in the dark. Hold on. We can see the storm. The blood runs through a surge of fragments saying we're brand new. And when the numbers rise and won't come down, it's a warning bell without a sound. Some echoes drift from distant fragile parts. Stress in the nerves, the kidneys, even heart. Snap the marks to where the switches live. Regulatory regions, what they give. Split by size. See you.